Rarely does one encounter an individual with such a diverse array of accomplishments, from performing at Disney's opening ceremonies, securing a singing contract with Sony in Nashville, orchestrating citywide fireworks displays, to substantiating fishtails with photographic evidence, all while amassing accolades as an accountant. For Felicia, however, mathematics stands as a primary passion she pursued ardently. Her affinity for math blossomed during her junior year in high school, complementing her innate curiosity in dismantling and reassembling objects. Her multifaceted achievements underscore a career shaped by unwavering commitment and a profound appreciation for analytical rigor. Let's see what makes Felicia so buzzworthy.
Welcome to the Buzzworthy Marketing Show.
Welcome to the show, Felicia. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you. And thank you for having me.
No, I appreciate you taking the time to talk with our audience today and tell a little bit about your story and what gotten you through and all that good stuff here. A quick question, though. Where are you calling in from first?
I am in the dead center of the Midwest, in the great state of misery, as we like to call it.
I just moved from the dead center of Illinois.
I'm sorry.
Yes, Springfield, Illinois. Now I live in the lush forests of Virginia.
I'm envious. I really am. So if you were in Illinois, then did you ever drive through the Great City?
Oh, we loved Illinois. We were big. Branson, Uranus, and St. Louis were our three top.
So as you drove through St. Louis, down to Uranus, and on to Branson, you bypassed me. I am right off of I-44 in Rolla, Missouri. We are a very small community, but a very large college community.
Ah, very, very cool. And now, is this where, did you grow up in Missouri?
No, I did not.
Where did you grow up?
I'm an Indiana girl.
Indiana girl?
Born and raised Hoosier.
Uh-oh. Are you a big fan of, was it Caitlin Clark?
Yes.
Awesome. I she's so inspiring. Where I was actually in Indiana not too long ago, and everybody was talking about it. And like everybody at the airport had Indiana because they were doing the Sweet 16, or they were, I think they were in the Sweet 16 or the Great 8 or whatever it is, and then the NCAA. So that was like a big deal. Like everybody had garb on and they were all talking about her. So that's awesome for her. So now in Indiana, you got started at an early age in entrepreneurialism. If I have my numbers right, somewhere between 16 and 17 years old.
Actually, a little bit younger because I graduated at 17.
Uh-oh.
I started my senior year of high school at 16. So I was about 15 because I was in my junior year of high school. I was a very young high schooler.
Ah, very good. But you were doing something, you had a little side hustle in high school.
Are you talking about my music career?
Yeah. Let's talk about that first. We both have something very in common at a very young age.
In high school, I had a major in music with a minor in business, and I took 9 years of vocals. So the pursuance of dance did not come until my daughter was born. And that led me in a whole nother direction completely, of which I'm still in today. That's a whole different story in itself. But yes, I do have a music background. Went to Nashville, actually. And when my daughter was, 3, went talk to the president of Sony Records, had a music producer, all that fun stuff. But you know, there's no guarantees in the business. And if you ever listen to anybody talk about that, you'll know. I mean, there's just no, and it takes forever to get there. And I'm like, yeah, you know, my practice was just really getting off the ground at that point and on my own. And I thought, you know, this is not the time nor the place. So, thanks. I did. I bowed out.
Thank you, but no, thank you. That's all right. Hey, you know, I pursued my music career, did not get a call from any Sony executives for 15 years. And I finally just said, you know what? I'm just not tall enough, dark enough, good looking enough, or talented enough to make it. So, it's just in the cards, you know, as everybody's got it going there. But you know, one of the things that got me into what I do is the jobs that kept me in music for 15 years. I paid for a lot of my bandmates' equipment along the way.
I get that. I get that completely. You know, as I said, there's it's hard. That industry is really, really hard. So you do kind of have to have two passions. Mm-hmm. When you know, what is your secondary passion? And mine just happened to be the fact that I loved math. Mm. And you know, with that, it segueing into that is that math actually plays into music.
Mm, oh yeah, for 100%. It's all math.
My dance world, which plays into the love that I've done for the last 25 years in the pyrotechnic world. Which is another whole avenue of who I am and what I am.
Now, how did you get, I saw that you did a huge pyrotechnics production. And now how does one get into pyrotechnics?
By accident. You get roped in the beginning of saying, hey, can you know, some of you know somebody that is doing this for, you know, right for their either passion or their living. And all of a sudden they're like, we need an extra hand. Can you come out and help? And I'm like, I have no clue what I'm doing. And they're like, that's okay. That's all right. We'll teach you. And it went from, okay, we'll teach you to me actually moving forward and actually going and getting my pyrotechnic shooter's license.
Oh, wow.
And then producing my own shows and creating my own shows. And I was actually shooting the shows for our hometown here for the last.
Amazing. That is amazing. I'm an unlicensed pyrotechnic shooter. So that was another. Yeah, we would go out to the lake, though. It was always like shooting them out into the lake.
At the park or at the.
This was in Oklahoma when I was in the Air Force.
Oh, so, okay. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. We would go out. Yeah, we'd get a bunch of pyrotechnic. It was legal then. I don't know if it's still legal there. But we would go to the pyrotechnic shop and we'd find things that we could, like mortars and all that good stuff.
Sure.
And around the lake, it was Texoma, not Texoma, 10 Killer Lake, I think is what it was called. And so you would see on the beaches, everybody kind of set up where they were camping. And so then, and basically you would have like each beach take turns in their different shows, right?
Well, the thing you were shooting off were what we call Class C fireworks.
Yes.
So the things that I shot off
were
Class A fireworks.
Yes.
Which are the things that you have to have a license to purchase.
Oh, yeah.
So I always tell people, just think about it this way. You know, when you're sitting back going, ooh, ah, that's really pretty. Look how cool that is. It's going 100 feet in the air, right? Yeah. I'm going to the back and going, oh my gosh, how much time do I have? And how many shells do I have left? And, you know, literally used to Metrodome to set my shows off.
Oh, that's awesome. That's definitely. We were here in, and so Williamsburg is the home of Colonial Williamsburg, which is like history Disney, as my wife likes to say. And we went to a fireworks show for during Christmas. And they call it the Great Illumination. It's like people from all over the world come to see this show and they do it over the old governor's mansion. And there is a mall that goes right down the center. So everybody's kind of sitting there. They turn off all the lights and everything like that. They have a explosion every half second for over 20 minutes straight. And it's right there. They don't even get 100 feet in the air. I want to say maybe 75. So you're feeling the compression, boom, 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 right into your chest. It was like, this is awesome.
That was one of the things that I loved about shooting fireworks is that sitting so close and the percussion, being able to feel it in my chest. Yeah. I would know as soon as the shot went off, I could, you know, you hear that.
Yep.
And then you feel it on the ground and I could feel it and hear it. I'm like, oh, it's
got there it is. But there is a lot of music.
The moment is timing.
Yes. Well, and fireworks is even harder than music because it's two sets of math, right?
Right.
You've got probably three sets of math because you have the timing of when it's going to explode, which means that you have to then figure out how long it's going to get to where it needs to be to explode. And then all the timing for the everything after, before and after that.
So I always said, you know, I always had help. I mean, you can't do it by yourself. It takes a team. Right. And my team, after we got to the point we knew how this, we were setting it up on the ground,
right,
then they would go to work doing a lot of the wiring to the box. And so they were doing the wiring. I was sitting at a picnic table with, okay, I have this many shells. Mm-hmm. I have this many ground pieces. These ground pieces take this long to go off. The shells are going to go up. I have this much music. Now, I didn't choreograph to the actual sound of the music, mm-hmm. but I had to make the show last mm-hmm. out of music that I had. Uh-huh. So, okay, I know how many I'm doing. So I'm like, okay, well, I have this many shells and this. So it's just all about. And you're right. So you had to time, okay, it's going to go up and it's going to dissipate, which, and you don't want to go too fast, right. But you also want to make sure that the other one is going up as soon as that first one's dissipating down. So there's always something flowing in the ear.
Yes, I love it.
A lot of people don't realize the timing and the work that goes behind those shows. There is a lot. It's dangerous.
I have seen, so in Alaska, there was a city fireworks and they did it from the inlet. So they were actually on a floating barge and shot everything from there. And everybody would look from the city downtown. And of course we have to do it in the middle of the winter when it's dark, because on 4th of July, midnight, it's still dusk. And so the fireworks don't have as much. The only thing you could pray for is a cloud cover. So yeah, at least had a backdrop and a little bit darker. But they actually had an accident one year. It was quite a few years ago. And something went sideways on the barge and the whole thing went.
It's easily done. It is very easily done. I had something go south in one of my shows. And I'm looking at it going, I don't understand what happened. And the show was over, right?
Mm.
I have already shot my finale. I'm done. I'm waiting for the dust to settle so I can go clear the show.
Yeah.
And as I'm waiting, I looked at one of the guys that I'm with, and I'm like, and he's a dynamite instructor at the university. And Paul, come look at this with me. I said, we have a whole rack that didn't
show. Unexploded ordnance, as we say in the military.
And he looks at me and he goes, I don't get it, Felicia. And I said, I don't either. So as I'm walking up, all of a sudden I heard, boom.
Oh, no.
And I felt, and these were on time delayed chains.
Oh, no.
So one, and there were 16 of them. And I'm backpedaling. And as I kind of like fall, I said, well, I guess I'm going to watch this show from the ground.
And everybody else in the crowd's just going, encore, yay!
That's exactly what they said. They said, what was that? And I said, oh, that was just my thank you.
I love it. Yes. The show must go on. Very, very theatrical of you. So with your accounting firm, are you a generalist, or have you found a niche of types of businesses that you liked? Are you a personal accountant or a business accountant?
So I'm a little of both.
Okay.
And to answer your question about my niche, so I have moved out of the full arena of offering full service accounting completely. And I am strictly playing with, as I call it, I play in the sandbox of tax, the tax mitigation and resolution world.
Ooh, so love it.
I am one of those people that I just love to go look for that needle in the haystack. And I love to be able to work with the IRS and say, hey, what gives, right. You know, how can we fix this? You know, what kind of agreements can we make? You know, it's all playing in that sandbox. And that's a sandbox that I love. Plan. You know, I am an agent, as you well know, for those who don't know, but I also am a certified tax resolution consultant or representation consultant, and I'm an accredited tax advisor. So I always say I have 2 degrees in accounting, 3 certifications in tax. I just like playing that tax sandbox. Again, what does that do for me? It's all about the math.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the math.
Yeah, interpreting the math, because you can do taxes is like fuzzy math to me, because...
Oh, it is.
If you look at the number this way, then the calculation goes this way. If you look at the number this way, the calculation goes this way.
And you know, it's really funny you say that, because that's very true. And it can be one box on a tax return that can throw everything. And I give you that example in wholehearted yesterday. I had a client come to me who did a self-prepared return. He goes, I have this notice. He goes, but I paid everything. I called the IRS. Sure enough. A self-prepared return, one box. You got that volatile one line off. So now it's all about amending the return and correcting it and making it right. But, you know, he just couldn't see it.
No. I don't understand how people even think about doing their own business tax returns. Like sole proprietor, maybe if you're under the 24,000 or something crazy like that, and you're just doing a straight 1040A, maybe. But I'm just like, no. I mean, my first year in business, I knew I lost money, and I'm like, I want to make full well sure that I take full advantage of my losses. So I paid the $1,500.
Right.
In 2005, that was a lot of money for me.
It's a lot of money for anybody in today's economy. But, yeah. You know, there's a lot of people that do their own returns, and that's okay. This individual, though, just happens to do his own return.
Before what?
He does with my hand. Go get the books from the library, mm-hmm. get the forms. Mm-hmm. I'm like, are you serious? Mm-hmm. This number one, that's your first problem.
Mm-hmm. Let's get into the 21st century.
Exactly. he's a very well-educated individual. And he just says, you know, as I age, he said, I just feel like it's one of those things that I still should be able to do. And I said, yes, but as we age, we miss things. So mm-hmm. when I call today, I said, oh, by the way, this was your mistake. And he goes, why didn't somebody tell me that before? And I said, because nobody really saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And they just
did it yourself. You didn't let anybody else look at your books.
Yeah, well, even the IRS, he talked to the IRS himself and they couldn't see it. And so
they didn't even see it. You know, they just know that, hey.
Yeah, it's on the wrong line. And yeah. You know, what they were seeing was wrong. And
that makes sense.
I mean, some of the simplest things, and I like to say it in the concept of life happens.
Mm.
Life gets in the way. Life tends to, you know, and I say that with all respect to anybody that does returns or anybody that's in our industry or that works with clients. Life happens. So our clients come to us because something in their life happened.
Mm.
Caused them to be where they are today. So have a little empathy, right? You can't, and be a little empathetic, but you also have to be a little strong and say, look, I understand life happened. However, we need to get you fixed.